Welcome, everyone, to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host, and with me for this Bad Batch report is Molly.
Hello, hello.
We are covering the 5th and 6th episode of Season 2, Entombed and Tribe. And we will be getting into it. Entombed, there was so much homage to, like, Indiana Jones.
Right.
Calls to Jedi Fallen Order, and of course, Godzilla.
You know what? I didn't even think of the Godzilla thing, but you're so right. I think I said on Twitter, I thought it was a giant chicken. just for the listeners to know, I haven't played, I know Fallen Order, I know all the character names and the storyline, but I haven't played it because I get dizzy so easily. And with the camera rotating so much, I played it a tiny bit and then I just gave up, and it sucks because, like, I want to be immersed in that storyline. So I didn't get any of it. I had to, like, go online and, like, read about everything. So when I saw that Godzilla, I thought it was a giant chicken. Like, that was the first thing I thought of. I don't know why. It was creepy.
Like a kaiju is more like, because it's not, Godzilla is specifically like the giant.
Yeah.
Like dragon, lizard. But like a kaiju is like a giant monster.
It was monstrous, though. I'm terrified.
Strange beast, I think it translates kaiju to. So.
It absolutely was. It was unsettling. It was almost an unsettling feeling. But anyway, that was just so everyone knows up front not to expect any Fallen Order lore from me, because I had to read like a Wikipedia about it to like double check after being told, hey, because there's a part where I was watching and I went, huh, those symbols on the wall look like the World Between Worlds, because, you know, I'm trying to relate everything to Rebels. And I had to be told, like, well, duh. Like, there's a lot of Jedi lore in this and, like, the ancients and stuff. And I was just like, oh, no. Like, I don't even look like I know anything about Star Wars. But what a good episode, though, just to get all that. You don't expect any of that from Bad Batch, usually.
Yeah. And the fact that they're like, exploring sort of this thing that does harken back to Jedi Fallen Order. I did play most of the way through Jedi Fallen Order. I found it really, really hard, like even on the easiest mode.
Yeah, it looks really hard.
I need, and this is my pitch to any Star Wars gamer creators out there, I need like an archaeology mode where I auto beat enemies and like pass like the jumping tests, where I can just look at the walls. Cause like literally I ran around Zepho, which is the planet that you like see all this kind of very familiar iconography from this episode. And I just looked at the walls like.
I don't blame you. That's what I did with the
anthropological archaeology mode, whatever. Like I need that where I can be just like, and I'm looking at the walls. I need that for Vader Immortal as well. Cause like there's beautiful art on the walls in Vader Immortal. And every time I get like motion sickness when I wear like VR. So I could.
That's exactly why I haven't done Vader Immortal.
Yeah.
I can't do it.
But like I've watched like walkthroughs, right? And I'm like, look at the walls. I'm like yelling at the screen, like, please just go and look at the walls. Look at that beautiful artwork that, no, okay. You want to go kill that guy?
Matt Martin,
bye.
Please help us motion sick people who cannot handle these VR games. Like, I know he can help at least with that one. It's like impossible to, I would love to see all of that. Like, or even like a side art of book that's just even like the archaeology aspects or like more with, I mean, obviously I need to get all of the art of books, even like there's one for Fallen Order, I think, but I don't have that one. But I've looked through like the one for Rebels and even that's not like comprehensive enough. There's just a lot that you miss. And we don't even have one for Bad Batch. There's no art of Bad Batch.
I mean, it took Rebels like years after Rebels was done to get the art of book out. I have the cool box set that opens and
the lights up.
Yeah, that lights up.
Yep. Same. That's
I love it so much.
It's worth it. Well, I would love a Bad Batch one like that too. That would just, or if, there's no, I don't even think there's an art of Resistance either. So if they could just do it for like all of the animated shows and do light up boxes, that would also be great.
Yeah, because you do like, I mean, yeah, Resistance would be interesting. Maybe the ships, that would be cool. Okay, we can get into the episode. Wrecker and Omega sort of start out the episode and they're searching the junkyard for treasure in a way. And that thematically ties to the sort of mission that Fee presents them with as they get back to the cantina.
I was happy to see Fee again, by the way. I'm just happy to hear Wanda Sykes and like get a lot of her character. And so it started off really well for me. I was a little worried at the beginning of this episode. I have no issue. I don't really believe that there are necessarily, filler episodes of shows like those. I like having that. I like having that kind of, moment of fresh air sometimes from the heavier storylines. And that's what I thought this episode was going to be, but it really wasn't for me. So anyway, continue.
It wasn't for me either. There was actually some really interesting deep psychological symbolism and exploration, which I feel like a lot of people missed in the reading of it. And it was very purposefully done with how they separated characters throughout the episode and brought them back together and things like that. But Fee says that she has a treasure hunter job. They're going to find treasure. She gets her droid Mel. I love her.
I do too. Okay, I love a female droid or coded female droid and droid. Ugh, I hate when they do this. I'm such a droid girl. I just am so excited to have new droids and then they take them from me.
Well, she says she can recreate.
Right. I know. I was like, whew.
She always ends up getting destroyed and then she ends up being okay. Omega had found something in the relics. So this is kind of cool that Omega had unearthed this compass and it had it ties them to the journey that they're about to go on. And the object with Mel's help ends up giving them the coordinates to this old system that nobody really knows how to get to anymore. And I love this because it's always been something I've been super fascinated with since they introduced Luke's compass.
I immediately was like, oh my gosh, they found the map to Luke Skywalker.
They found the map to Luke Skywalker. Yeah, Luke's compass, the Wayfinder even from Tross. I like just this idea that... And Zepho and some of the other things that they've been pulling on in more recent Star Wars, with Rebels and with Rebels talking about ancient Mandalore, with Clone Wars Season 7 talking about ancient Mandalore. I'm like, I want to go back. I want to go to before times.
I would love that. I mean, I have nothing negative to say about High Republic, but it's I want to go even far. I mean, that's the weird stuff that you get into. Well, at least I get into those wormholes I get into on Wikipedia sometimes, looking at all of the legends. I wasn't that into Expanded Universe when it was still called that. And then I just get into these articles and oh my gosh, there's just so much they could create and explore. And it's that's what is exciting, them finding coordinates to these systems that or planets that they don't even that have been completely forgotten about and lost. And I just want to see even more expansion into that, because who knows what lore we're missing out on,
And also there's ways that they could explore even though this is quote unquote before the Jedi, there's still ideas of the Force that I feel they could explore from a very ancient perspective. And even early Jedi is really cool too, that idea. Omega's super excited to actually go and do a treasure hunt and has
She's
really
so cute.
Connected with Fee, which I love to see her connect with women mentors.
Oh, yeah. And she doesn't even I love her blinders about she's just such a not she's trusting, but she's also just doesn't let the opinions of others influence her connections. I really okay, there's a moment in the episode where she pushes Wrecker out of the way, right? And saves him from that rock falling. And it is not mentioned. He doesn't say thank you or anything like that. And I was if that had been Omega, she would have been so thankful and praising her and all that. She's just that's, it's just she has such a good way of connecting with people. And it's just like nice to see. But yeah, I agree. I love seeing her interact with other women. I love that the show
gives her that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really worried about that in first season.
Mm-hmm.
And they've really worked hard to rectify that with bringing in Fee and with, you know, because she would run into like people like Fennec Shan and like that would give her pieces. And it's like, I feel like this is just a really important part of her development. But like, as much as this is a Hunter's like, nah, I don't want to. And it's a little bit of like letting Omega make decisions on her own.
She runs that crew. Let's be real, because how many times are we seeing them? How often are we seeing? I was thinking that during this episode, I'm like, Clone Force 99, they do not want to do 95% of the trips that they're making. Like, they don't want to do it. And yet somehow they are constantly roped into it. And usually it is because Omega's like, she just takes charge and they let, like you see with a Tribe where she's like, well, we're going to return Gunji to his planet. She doesn't even ask. I love that. I love that she just is like commanding them. It's fantastic to see.
It really is. So they take the Marauder to this planet and they kind of get their way to the mountain that they're going to go into. And all throughout this, Fee is telling Omega kind of stories about how, you know, the adventures that she's been on and kind of expounding on her glory. And my friend Michelle, who was on the show last week.
Yeah, I love her.
She's like, doesn't it remind you of kind of like Long John Silver or like an older mentor, like telling these stories of like treasure?
Yeah, well, it's just like classic adventure. I mean, it's just like a classic kind of adventure plot, which is, again, why I was so surprised by the latter half of this episode. I cannot stress enough, by the way, that I'm fairly confident that this was my favorite episode so far, just because of how much thought went into everything with this episode. Like, I don't know, for some reason, this whole story, maybe it's also because of this like treasure hunting story, because I love anything like I, you know, love Pirates of the Caribbean, the Indiana Jones films that I have seen and have already committed with someone to, like, I need to actually watch all of them. They were just too scary for me when I was younger. And by younger, I mean teenager. But I get scared easily. What can I say? But yeah, it was just like, I see that too. Like the Omega just connecting with her and kind of shutting out, not like purposely shutting out Clone Force 99, but like, you know, she has her own little,
like, really identifying with the sort of hero worship of this person that, you know, she's got a cutlass. She is powerful in and of herself, and she doesn't need the protection of the Bad Batch.
No.
Right.
She's growing up.
Yeah. And Omega kind of realizes that the compass is like leading them where they need to go, doing all of those things as Fee kind of confirms all of her suspicions as they go. They enter into this sort of cave and they are being watched, and the music is like super disconcerting. It's really well done. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the mountain itself is called Skara Knoll.
Thank you. I was trying to remember the name of it.
And she explains that the legend of Skara Knoll predates the Jedi and that there is a treasure known as the Heart of the Mountain. Mm-hmm. And they start to like get in there. And, you know, anytime from a mythical perspective that you start to kind of go in underground, you're instantly going into the unknown. There's some sort of transformation that needs to happen. Somebody needs to transform. That's the reason you go into the underworld. There is a feeling that something needs to happen. And it's not Omega. It's not Omega that needs to transform.
No, it's a giant chicken.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he does sort of transform. It's kind of like a Zord.
It just, oh my gosh, I can't stress that moment just took me by surprise, I guess. I don't, there's just a lot going on. I want to, like, just talking, even just this, like, short time we've talked about it now, this is, like, I want to go back and rewatch it again, just to, like, slow down and take in more, because I was so focused on, like, what horrible thing is going to happen to them now? There goes Fee, just, like, charging forward. And like Bad Batch is just standing there, or the guys are just standing there, like, they're just so wary And I'm like, come on, guys, get in on the fun. Let's go. This is just, it's such a fun circumstance for that. There's, I like it because there is no, there's no connection right now to, while they're in the mountain, there is no connection to anything going on with the rest of the story. And I think that's where people start to think this is a filler episode. And I don't look at it that way. I see it as like, I mean, this is just like a fun new like mystery that we're getting that removes us from everything going on with the, you know, aftermath of Order 66 and any sort of like mission that they have to do for Cid. Like it, I like that it's not as formulaic. It's not following anything that I guess a normal filler episode would.
And I don't actually think that there are filler episodes.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Because film animation, I think there's always some sort of exploration of a theme, and the character is the plot. The plot is the character. And so, who needed to learn something in this episode, Molly?
You're asking the wrong person. As I have stated before, I watch everything at a very it's very face value for me, which is why I was shocked that I was noticing things in the background this time. Normally, I have to like rewatch because I'm paying so close attention to like what the characters are saying. I want to hear what your answer is and see if I agree.
It's Hunter.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, explain.
Okay, so he is the one that is hesitant
to put
them at risk.
Yeah.
And I actually have it in a symbolic element that Fee talks about. I'll get it. Okay. So they get in and the fanged monster attacks them and separates them because they fight back the monster, and it actually separates them because they are fighting the monster. They have no choice. The monster's trying to kill them, right? Like this, like it actually ends up kind of looking like a small version of what the big creature ends up looking like.
I was thinking that too. I always watch these episodes wondering if there's some sort of like theme, idea, creature, whatever, that I should know from previous Star Wars media that I've missed out on, because there's only so much that I can absorb and remember. So I was just happy that I was like, wait, he looks like the giant chicken.
Yeah. And I think that that's purposeful because they have to, they're saying that when you fight something within, it's going to destroy from without.
That's so good. I need to talk to you before we record so I sound smart too. That's just like, like I get the symbol. As soon as you connect those dots for me, like this is like what I majored in too. Like I can do it when I'm reading poetry. I can break it down and tell you all the symbolism. But when I'm watching Star Wars, I'm like just some, I'm not getting there.
But I love that you're so happy about the show and that it makes you feel things so much.
It means a different thing. I think it just, it means a lot to me as an illustrator to get these stories. That's why this episode is just so wonderful, because I've gone back and rewatched important episodes to me in the first season of Bad Batch. And, you know, same with Rebels. And I'm sure I'll do the same when I sit down and do all of Clone Wars. And no, I mean, that's completely right. Like, why else? I think it's important that us as viewers challenge ourselves to think of why, like the why. Why is that creature a smaller version with fangs? So, you know, much more of a threat.
Much more of a threat. In
how
the
is
moment.
It any different from like the cave? How is it any different, you know, for Rey or Luke, you know, going into the cave or pit? How is it any different from that?
It isn't.
I think it's you know, it's and I forget.
It's the same as like the maze and the Minotaur myth.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because it's completely true.
They are facing a version of what they become later on in the episode. And in the maze and the Minotaur, he goes into the maze and faces the Minotaur, but he is also the monster. They're both princes. And the only way they get out is through Ariadne's string, the guiding light of the femme.
No, it's all the same thing. It's I need to personally, like, I know mythology. So it's just like, I think Lucasfilm, if you are listening right now, if you could just drop episodes a little earlier when I'm not, it's not 2 a.m. for me. And I'm like already, in my pajamas, like teeth brushed. Like I'm not even
morning. I'm always fresh.
Not a morning person though. Okay. Maybe like drop half the episode early. midday drop or something. Like, I think I would get to that point a little bit faster. I do my best thinking though in the evenings, but like 2 a.m. is usually wind down time for me. So it's like I'm not getting all that.
I have early calls.
No, yeah. So you've got important things to do. Okay. Let's be real.
Fee actually, once they're separated, she says, "This reminds me of the time that I found the Belmont diadem." Do you want me to tell you what that means?
Yeah, go for it.
Beautiful mountain, right? But a diadem is specifically a crown.
Right.
Which is mistaken for a tiara, but it's actually more likely looks like a headband.
It's a headband.
And what is a headband? She calls it out in that moment. She calls Hunter headband. This is all for Hunter.
Oh, you're so right. I was so focused on her saying brown eyes, and they all have brown eyes.
She only calls Tech brown eyes.
I know. But
Hunter is headband, and she says, "This reminds me of the Belmont, beautiful mountain headband. This mountain is you. And so you have to conquer your mountain of fear that you have, Hunter."
I wish everyone could see me right now. I'm just like, oh my God. I didn't even think to translate that either. Oh, that's so good.
It's one of those like weird things that where the writers are like, they really are just layering it on. They know
they are.
This episode is not like, I mean, it's exciting for me. It reminds me exactly of Indiana Jones. It reminds me of Jedi Fallen Order. It reminds me of like a kaiju movie. Like it reminds me of treasure hunting in general, but it has all this psychological symbolism in it that is really, really powerful. If you just kind of like let it sit with you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm calling it out because I see it and then I'm like, oh yes, this is what it's doing. But even if you don't, you can see like Hunter's struggling.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's important too. Hunter is by far like the soft. I mean, he's soft. Like, and not in a, I don't mean it in like a, you know, your weak way, because I think softness is such a strength. This whole thing is just very integral to the whole season, because we don't know what's coming. Like, obviously we have more with Crosshair and Cody, which obviously, like, I'm so curious, like, what's going on over there? And, you know, there's a reason why we haven't visited them again. I think that episode was just to remind us, like, there's this other arc that's going to be going on. But like, it's important to see Hunter is very much like the focus outside of Omega, because Omega, she's very emotionally mature, and it's just nice to see that Hunter's getting just as much attention. Like, the writers are paying just as much attention with him too. I think that's going to be important later on too.
And they focused a lot on Echo and Tech so far this season.
Yeah, I was about to say Echo too.
And given a lot to Echo, actually. Like, he's almost like the conscience of the group. We haven't so much with Wrecker, but I'm sure we will.
He's a big softie though. Whatever Omega wants, he's just an extension of Omega anyway. So
I love it.
He's the best.
I love the scene when they roll the pebble after like they fall through and they have to like pull Fee back. Mm-hmm. And she uses the compass to, you know, reveal the footprints on the roof and then turn the room. That was so cool.
Yeah. No, I know. I'm just trying to remember I'm just trying to look for more symbolism before you can catch me again. So I'm just kidding.
No. But I did love that she pointed out that Skara Null had to reclaim the piece, the compass. I really liked that. That was cool.
Yeah.
And then they catch up, Wrecker and Echo and Tech catch up with them at the door. And they're like, how do we unlock this magical thing. And she's like, sometimes the door is just a door.
That was so good.
It really reminded me of like a D&D moment where the rogue is like, okay, I got a test for traps.
It was just so good. I mean, it's important to remember too that like with Star Wars, you want to think everything has like another meaning to it, which like obviously you've demonstrated, like, of course this episode does, but like it is important to remember that like
sometimes it's just fun.
It's just fun, or it's just something there. I love the little, I mean, that's why I love when they have comedians voicing characters to give us that little bit of like brevity and humor. Otherwise, the show would be so much darker, I think. Like, it's good to have that. But yeah, that was a great line.
It's really good. So they find the heart of the mountain, and it's like, it's sort of like a key, right? And they've already had experiences with like keys and unlocking things and turning things. And so of course you just have to turn it and pull it out.
And that's when you're like, haven't you watched Indiana Jones? Like,
yeah.
You can't just take it.
There's so much Indiana Jones in this.
I know. And I saw that. I went on Twitter just like looking to see what people had been saying after the episode came out. And it was like, you know, that's just like the main, like everybody was just like excited that it was just, it felt so very like influenced by Indiana Jones, because like we love seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
We love that. So
can't wait for my Willow episode.
Wait, what?
I just want Willow influencing Star Wars now.
Well, I mean, I do. That's just a reminder. I need to watch it. I just want to see more of this adventuring, I think, like with Star Wars. I think that that's so fun and something
I feel
that,
like that's what we're going to get with Acolyte. Like it'll be.
Yeah.
Oh, like so treasure hunting.
Yeah,
like
treasure I know. Hunting. You're right. I'm so
it'll be good. I'm like, it's the thing I'm looking forward to the most next. Yeah.
I would 100% agree with that. I'm that or more visions, because I loved.
Oh, visions. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have in my notes, activates metal kaiju. But like, it's really interesting. So there is a metaphor in this, right? Yeah, when you take the heart out of the creature, it's really a sleeping giant, and it's going to become more powerful than you can predict.
Obviously.
And destructive. It's a very one-to-one metaphor.
I mean, you knew that that heart, I mean, it was just, it wasn't going to just like go with them and just be the easy, like there was no way, not with how ominous everything feels.
It sort of looked like have you ever seen The Fifth Element?
No.
It sort of looks like the element stones, but like glowy. I loved it. It was pretty. Like I want one.
I do too. I was like, when is this at Galaxy's Edge, even though they don't give us really anything for I don't think there's anything for Bad Batch, but I was just like, I saw it and was just like, kyber crystal? Like, I just...
Yeah, it's like a giant kyber crystal, sort of. But it had cool stuff cool on glow. The inside.
I'll draw it. It was really pretty. It was pretty...
Like, you should watch Fifth Element, but the stones in it, like, the pattern on it reminded me a lot of the shape and how the stones look in Fifth Element.
Watch anything with pretty glowy.
They only become glowy crystal. At the end. They look like sandstone most of the movie, but it's cool. Yeah. So the machine, and with them inside of it, starts to destroy the planet. And they were wondering what had destroyed the planet previously. Well, now you know.
Yeah. They're so dumb. I love them. It's very rare that you see any sort of, you know, I hate to use the word like magical, but like magical or fantastical elements combined with machinery. You really only see that with steampunk elements almost, but it's so interesting and cool to see it, because I never, ever think that something so like horse connect. I mean, like with machine.
Like Zeppo is connected to the Force. Like,
oh
the,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's why when they're in that, the heart, like, look, I mean, just like, and I think maybe this is just because not cosplay, but like what I'm working on to wear at Celebration has to do with the World Between Worlds. So I've been studying all of the different portals a lot. So on the walls, it looks like more portals. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I was so excited, because it took me a very long time to locate the portals that we see in the World Between Worlds.
There's some in Rebel. Mortis.
Yeah. And like, I wanted more of that, but like it's just so interesting to see that inside of something that is like this giant machine. It's not like, I just want to know more. It's such an unsettling feeling. And I love that. I'm so sad that like, I know how hard it is. We need to see more of that in shows or movies. And I feel like that's maybe why they touched on it.
And getting that like feel for the larger universe and the ancient universe,
so
which
cool.
is what we get the impression of, like this is ancient. And they're definitely laying the groundwork to say it's not just Jedi Fallen Order.
That makes me so happy. I'm so hungry for that. Like, especially because I cannot physically play the video games. I feel very left out of that part of Star Wars. And I think that this, it's very intentional that all of this is happening, that we're seeing this.
And like, yeah, Jedi Survivor is coming out very soon, right? So
yeah.
Yeah. Fee ends up almost falling out because she drops the heart and it rolls. And you'll notice that the heart is actually because they're in the head.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I said heart. But yeah,
no, but like the thing is the heart, right? But they're in the head. So it's psychological, right? They're in the mind of this creature. And like Fee almost falls out. Hunter saves her, which is great, right? Because that's, you know, really, really important that he goes out on a limb for somebody he doesn't particularly like.
Right.
And they're attacked again by the fanged creature and they manage to get it out of the eye.
Is that something else?
No, I don't think so. Okay, I think it was just convenient.
Okay, good.
I mean, loss of an eye is gained wisdom, but that's fine. I
was waiting for it.
But, you know, they have to put the heart back in. It melts. Yeah. It shuts the kaiju down. And then, you know, they've saved their ship, which was their big worry. They couldn't get off this planet. They would be permanently stuck. But they saved the ship. And, you know, Fee's like, and on to the next adventure.
It's not about like getting the treasure and taking it off world. It's all about like the story that you can go back and tell later on and like the legends that you're creating yourself.
Also, that's what Omega says to the crew. It's like, we got stories.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Oh, yeah. She's so happy. I'm just glad she's happy.
What do you think of this episode?
I mean, if it wasn't clear, I loved it. I want to go back and rewatch it with everything in mind now, which I was already planning to rewatch it just because like what you do with Fallen Order, I want to look around more, especially because while watching it, I was not on my phone looking things up. And so I know that there's stuff I missed. But I really liked it because I am so desperate for us to explore more with the Force and weird Star Wars.
Weird Star Wars be weird.
Yes, exactly. I was about to say, like you say, like we love when Star Wars is weird and I want more of that. And I know we will be getting that, but I don't look to like Mandalorian for that. And I don't look. I mean, there's just certain things I'm not looking at to give me those things. And to see it in The Bad Batch, which like, to be honest, like I would say that the majority of the people who follow me on Twitter are not watching it. And I'm not judging anybody for that. It's not for everyone. But to get that in the second season of an animated show about, you know, clones, it's just like so unexpected. And it's such a treat. And makes me so, it just like rejuvenates me for my excitement for future projects. Like, who knows what else we're going to be exploring.
I love when Star Wars is weird so much. Like, it's what I live for. I also love the Force. I love all the Force-y stuff. So, yeah.
I always think it's really fun to get all of that without Jedi involved. Love the idea of it.
Mm-hmm. It's also a religion. It's supposed to just be like everybody. And
exactly.
One thing that like I know it's been mixed messages through the Disney era of Star Wars, but anyone can be a Jedi. Like literally that's supposed to be how it is. It's just some people are just more.
Well, we're all connected with the Force, right?
Exactly. I mean, right.
Or that's how it's supposed to be. And
yeah. And the messages were a little muddled. And
Well,
but, you know, like anyone could, you know, finally connect with the Force and have it happen.
Well, I mean, wouldn't it be cool if like, I don't know, not saying like Omega is a Jedi or anything, but just like she's so in tune with like, I don't know. That's just like she's such a curious nature and she connects so well emotionally with pretty much anyone. And that's another.
Wait a second.
You know, yeah, it's like, I don't know.
I mean, I would be fine if they never did that. But
no, I know. But if she's
it also like kind of says some really interesting things about the story if they did.
Or just like I like touching on people being a little bit more force sensitive than others, like Padme, where they're not Jedi, but they are, or like Shmi, where they are just more connected to it because I love it when it. I love Star Wars when it's looked at as like this, it's this cosmic force and it's a religion. I
mean, yeah. Jedi, being a Jedi is a religion aspect, but everybody is part of the Force.
Yeah.
So like everybody has that
in them. Well, I mean, I hope that they touch on that again.
I hope so, because it's valuable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
All right. Let's move on to episode 6, Tribe. We start out with the crew, the Clone Force 99, attempting to sell chain codes that have been prepped by tech to the Vanguard Axis, which is an entire underworld organization run by droids. And I lost my mind.
I know.
They kind of all look like L3. Like the Vanguard Axis specifically is brand new as of this season. I love them so much. And they use electrostaffs, right? Which makes sense. Like, yeah. And so they don't trust the Bad Batch, even though they're like tech's like, I program these personally. Like, how dare you? And so they end up checking the chain codes individually, right? So chain codes are used to like basically like get past Imperial checkpoints and things like that. You're like, yeah, here's my code, you know, and they're creating fake IDs. Essentially, yeah. Omega's been asked to stay with the ship with Echo. Of course, this is quite a dangerous situation. The Vanguard Axis doesn't look like they don't mess around.
Yeah.
And Echo's like, I'll go and prepare the ship for departure. I'll stay with the ship. And Omega hears a Wookiee roar and departs to go and investigate.
This is the running gag of Bad Batch is stay with the ship and Omega distancing herself from like, she does not, I don't know why they even bother at this point. Like, I mean, of course she's going to go and investigate.
Of course she is. And if she sees somebody in danger, she's immediately going to go and help.
Yeah.
Like, it's really important that she's like that. She just does those things. And so
she
sees that a Wookiee is sort of being tortured and is chained up and ends up freeing him. The Wookiee is very appreciative, and they end up sort of being chased by the Vanguard Axis through the different sort of maze. We got a maze theme again. Through the maze of boxes.
Yeah, I got you.
Two episodes. It's weird because I didn't think the last two episodes would go together, and these two episodes actually go together quite well too.
Yeah, no, I know. I was thinking that too, because I was like, they're two very, they feel very different, but they're definitely connect. That's again why I don't really believe in filler episodes, because you're watching, something happens each episode, like it's important for you to see that happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just very telling that we get a Jedi or
he's a Padawan, maybe, who knows, like
I don't know anymore.
I mean,
I think Padawan.
Yeah, Wookiee's age slower than humans, but yeah. I doubt he was. They call him a kid. They call him a kid, and he's very short.
He is a kid. He looks like a kid.
Did you ever see the Padawan episodes? Yeah.
So I actually, I was going to say, thank goodness, what little Clone Wars I have seen and remember, I knew exactly who he was. I've seen those episodes, and they were some of my favorites. Probably the most enjoyable.
You get all this Hondo stuff in there, and then you go to Galaxy's Edge and you realize that Hondo's ship is named the Katooni, which is one of the Padawans.
Yeah.
And now you're like, where are all the other Padawans?
Yeah. Well, I was just happy because the whole reason why I started Bad Batch in the first place was because, I mean, like, the whole reason why I did it was because at the end of Rebels, I was so desperate for more Rebels because I was just like crying. And, you know, the very first episode, I think it's the very first episode, right? Of Bad Batch, we meet Kanan as a Padawan and Caleb.
How many times do we need to see Order 66? That's my question.
Indefinitely. Oh, we're going to get more of it too.
I know.
It's hard, especially because we got that also with Kenobi and.
And also with Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah, but I don't really mind them, I guess. It's just hard sometimes. But I was just happy to see it again, because that's how we started Bad Batch. And I was just like that callback. But yeah, it's a lot of Order 66.
It really is.
I think that's going to be the huge thing that this season is about. We already saw it with the third episode.
Yeah.
I think that's very telling.
And it calls back to it just because of how Gunji acts too.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, poor Gunji.
And so they get in trouble and are getting cornered, and the Axis leader is called for help, and Tech's like, oh, it's got to be Omega or Echo.
Duh.
This is our problem. They confront Omega, Echo, and the Wookiee, who we find out is Gunji later. And the Axis leader like warns them to not get involved in their business because they need to keep the Wookiee alive because he's worth more alive, right?
Yeah.
Gunji uses the Force to draw out his lightsaber, which is so cool to actually see it in this new animation.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
It looks great.
It looks great. I love it. And like seeing that we've seen it created, it hit me like right in the feels.
Aw.
I love that episode so much when they create their lightsabers. I know.
I remember that one. Well, because that's more of like the kind of Star Wars that I want to see. I want to see how, like, not how it's made, but like I that's why I remember those episodes so well. Just because it's so cool. It has anything to do with like the construction of the lightsabers or anything with kyber crystals, I guess. So
and they go on their like kyber crystal.
Yeah, exactly.
Hunts, and they're like going through there, and you find out that that's Ilum, and now that's destroyed. You're like, ah, Star Wars. Why?
I'm always like that.
Why? So they end up escaping after like, you know, beating up the Axis and fleeing to the Marauder and then jump into hyperspace. And Omega's really worried about this Wookiee, and so approaches, and he's already reacted quite badly to the clones before. And he's scared. He's absolutely scared of them. And of course, the clones understand.
Oh, well, they know immediately. I mean, it's Hunter, right? Who says that they're not like the other clones. And that, I don't know, for some reason, that one just like, it really, like, because I don't think of them as clones. Like, if I say that, it's just because, you know, I mean, they were, but like, I don't think of them that way. And it just, nice to, you know, be reminded of how different they are and how, like, you know, it's sad to see him cowering, and I'm just glad that they got him. I don't know. I was just very sad and emotional because Genji's just so cute.
What I love about Clone Force 99 is that although they look so different than the regular clones, they are still like them.
Yeah.
And in that, like, they still use D's voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
And although they sound so different, but then when you actually put them against all of the different clones we saw in the Clone Wars, all clones are different.
Yeah, they all, I mean, that's the importance of the show, I think. It's like the most basic level of understanding what the show is about is to remind you that they are their own selves, which, because you don't get that in the movies.
It's like one of the first or second episodes where Yoda's with the clones on that one base, and he says, you're all different in the Force.
Yeah.
And like, it's such a fundamental, important thing to express, is that just because you've been conscripted from birth into war doesn't mean that you're not an individual, and doesn't mean that you don't deserve to have your own life. It's really, really key. And like you said earlier on in the episode, Omega says, we've got to take him back. He wants to go to Kashyyyk.
She just like doesn't. I just really love how she just says it and doesn't ask. And, you know, she, and I love how they just like, it's very different from the first season where they do have to be convinced, like with the arc with like young Hera, and like they don't even need to be like persuaded to do something usually now. And I love Wrecker's response where he's like, well, it's been a while since we've been there. He's just like leans. I just love the ease of it. And they're like, of course they're going to help him. And this is obviously so good for Echo too, because finally, it's a callback to the, I think the second episode, first or second episode where, you know, he's like, we should be doing more. more. There's a reason why it was Echo who was with Omega when they heard Genji being tortured.
So. Yeah. And he, like, later on in the episode, he reminds them that the Wookiees have been our allies for years, like the Jedi, that too. And working with the clones. And
I needed to hear that, though. Like, of course that's true. They were, like, we saw that with
Revenge Attack of the Sith, Clones, but, like, and then in Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, no, I when they're on Kashyyyk and, like, you see them interacting, and then you see that that's the most impactful changeover for me with Yoda. But that's why I was just like, I needed to hear that. I needed that reminder that, of course, they weren't just clones on the planet, not interacting with the inhabitants. Like, you know, I needed to see that, or I needed to hear that again. It was nice to hear.
They arrive at Kashyyyk, and somebody asks Genji how he's so familiar with it, and he said from his dreams. And I did get, like, choked up. Like, that is, that says so much in one line. And, like, little side note, whenever Tech is translating for Genji, his, like, little visor comes down because he's reading it.
I didn't even notice that.
It's like he's got subtitles.
I was just waiting for him to just do a constant translation for me, because you hear a lot of what is it?
Hunter just, like, replies because he understands it.
He said his Wookiee's it's not called, what is it?
Shiwook.
Yeah, he was like, it's a little rusty.
Yeah,
And I was like, oh, what is he? Like, that's so fun. That
so like, fun. But like the dreams thing is like, well, he was taken away when he was a little baby.
I mean,
so he doesn't remember.
Well, what is the, you know, arguably one of the biggest
sins of the galaxy is taking Jedi, or the Jedi Order is one of the biggest sins the Jedi commit is taking children away from their parents
and then not letting them see them again. But
yeah,
I mean. It is a callback to what is arguably one of, like, the most contested things, which is, I guess, like, not a plot hole, but, like, something that is always a topic of conversation is, how does Leia remember her mother? Or how, and then you think it's of, like, Force. All the dreams that Anakin has, and it's, like, it's just such a cool thing. Like, they are exploring things that...
But it's layered connected. Because it's just... It's one line and it means a lot of things.
I know.
It's well written.
It is. Oh, it's a very well written.
They arrive at a village and it's burning and it's being attacked by Trandoshans using Imperial equipment.
How did they get that?
It's answered later. But they're burning these, like, stones, which kind of look like large Wookiees.
I was curious about why the right before, like, some of them are burnt, why Trandoshan says we found more of those stones. Like, why was I didn't understand why that was being reported. Like, shouldn't they already know to just, like, burn them? I don't know.
It was for our benefit, probably. But like, the stones themselves sort of look like religious in some way.
Yeah.
And, you know, the fire itself is like, what they're doing on the planet is they're stripping it for resources. So they're taking down the trees, they're mining probably. And this is all just a large metaphor for the consumption of the dark side in the galaxy, right? Consuming others and not living in a balanced and harmonious way.
Well, and I mean, the large part of this episode is also, like, the connection with nature and, like, the difference between, like, the lowercase n for nature and the nature as its, the capitalized one, like, the nature as its own, like, romanticized entity. And I love stuff like that, because that's what I that's part of what I studied in school. And it was, like, romantic poetry. And so it's like, it always hurts me seeing any sort of, like, strip, like, it hurts me to see it in the real world, and it hurts me to see it in Star Wars. I mean, we get that also with Andor,
it's a, like, huge repeated symbol. I think it's been used 70 plus times in Star Wars.
I just love that you pulled that, like, knowledge out like that.
Well, it was about 2 years ago, and I counted it was 63, but I'm sure been more than 70 at this point.
It's impressive. I mean, we're just gonna get more of it. But I mean, that's why this was a cool episode too. They're not just, like, burning things down just to show that they're destroying things. Like, you know, it definitely, I love that tie in, how you're just I mean, that's what I mean by, like, he saw Kashyyyk in his dreams, because it's just the connection with nature is so important. And I just love the symbolism of that. I love that they're just not, it's not an unnecessary destruction that we're seeing. Like, there is a reason why. So
yeah, and it ties directly to greed, right? And selfishness and like the larger thematic elements associated with the dark side, in that you don't ever think you have enough when you're doing those things.
And the selfishly more you pursuing. Get,
the more you want.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's just such an easy way to show it from a location, from a having this in the background, having people suffer because of it, because there is no free resources, right? Like when you consume, something dies.
Exactly. I just it's a very pointed point to make, because it's just one of those times where it's like, this is very indicative of like the real world for us too. But I do like that this is the second time that we're seeing something referenced about a planet or home being stripped of its resources just in this season alone. And we have been getting a lot more of that with Star Wars media, and not just because of where we are in the timeline. Like, duh, of course we're gonna see the aftermath of, like, you know, the Empire's destruction, but like,
and also like they have to strip the galaxy to build the Death Star to have ultimate control.
Yeah.
And also as the Empire grows, it becomes more and more hungry. And as the dark side grows, it needs to cause more suffering.
Yeah.
Like, it's both of those things.
It's hungry.
Hunger. Yeah. And hunger and greed, right? Like, it's all about consumption and consuming things without having the rebirth aspect, that creation aspect, which is why so many of us really wanted a miraculous transformation at the end of The Rise of Skywalker, where things were healed.
Yeah. Ugh, that would have been
right. Like,
I know.
I mean, it symbolically, it's just really interesting, and it needs to happen in a way to like heal things. There are other ways you can do it. You can show passage of time and how things have been reclaimed by nature, but you have to show that happening.
We don't ever get that. We don't get those jumps with Star Wars. If it has happened, it's not jumping into my head right away. You really only get a jump forward with something that like a singular character is doing. You're not actually getting a time stamp, and it would be really nice, I think, to, I don't know, I think that it's usually, I feel like it's treated as like a type of storytelling that's like a cheap shot. And I don't see it that way. I think it's nice to tie those things up in a nice bow, even if that bow's a little sloppy. Like, it would be great to get that healing. I didn't even consider that. Like, I could do a whole episode with you about Rise of Skywalker. Like, obviously anyone can, but particular.
But I mean, I think that, like, because we've seen so much destruction and consumption.
Yes. It's not balanced out, I guess.
It's not balanced out, right? And
that's such a good point.
But there is balance in this episode, and I want to talk about it.
Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. It's great. It's great because we can show like the reverse of that, right? So we have Yana, who is introduced, who's this, they arrive at the tribe, and she's like this elder who I kind of called her like the great mother of the tribe. But I mean, I
was
love
like,
her.
Mala.
Mala. Yeah. Yana. Yeah. Like, she's great. I love her. I was like, I liked her outfit. I like that she's like so much smaller than everybody else.
Yeah.
And she invites them in and they hang out with her, and like, she can't find Gunji's home, but she accepts Gunji into their tribe.
Yeah. I mean, you knew that's what they were going to say. Like, they're not going to shut him out, but you know, it's just like, it really does hit you. Cause it's like, he has no idea what tribe he's from. It just like really strikes you as it's just another like negative output of like the Jedi, which they would not have deemed it important for a Padawan to know any of that. And
it was actually a negative thing to have any concept of attachment to the outside world.
But then it's like, well, their hubris is what blinded them from seeing their own destruction. And it has such a negative impact.
Even though they thought they were interconnected with the galaxy, and others, the only way you do that is actually through affection and love.
Exactly. I know. Yeah. That's what I want. I also want to see more of that too, though, with future Star Wars. It's what I really, really wanted from the end of the sequel trilogy. I just want more of that too. But that's completely separate. I mean, it's just like really interesting seeing the repercussions of what the Jedi did without even really having to mention them or put blame on them direct. I mean, vocally, like you just, it's just sad. It's sad. I just don't like that they get they're not allowed any sort of connection to their homes or families whatsoever, because to me, that would be like the most hurtful thing for me if I had to go through that. Cause like, you only think about how cool it would be to be a Jedi. You don't think about like, I don't know, like what Gunji's going through and how he like somehow fought his way to surviving that long, and then only to be returned to his planet and not know where to go, just be lost. Poor Gunji and his tooth.
Yeah, his one little snaggle tooth.
I love it so much.
And we have that the reveal that the Trandoshans are actually working with the Empire, and you know, like this is just the big, you know, like imperialism, capitalism. You know, they're interconnected. And as well as like dominating others, right? So they want to capture the Wookiees to either kill them and strip them for their pelts or enslave them. And, you know, they want to capture Gunji because he's worth a lot of money. And like, it is just like more layers of that consumption aspect, and that you can only get it through dominating and hurting others.
Well, and what I was thinking when they said to, like, what does he say? He's like 100 pelts for whoever captures
the Jedi.
Which I was like, I mean, aren't they already doing stuff like that? But, you know, I was like sitting there continuing to watch, but I was also thinking about it. I was like, so like, okay, so someone ends up with that pelt. Are they really thinking this was once connected to like a, you know, a sentient, like humanoid, you know, creature? It's not even a creature. I mean, they're its own race of people. And it's like, whoever is buying that and, I don't know, making it into a Cruella de Vil style coat, are you really thinking that? Because like, I'm not trying to make a connection or anything to like wearing fur or something. I don't mean it like that. I mean it like as, it's just so gruesome. I guess that line just really like struck me also because I'm so sensitive, just so like constantly tweeting about like capitalism anyway, but it's just like, oh my gosh, that's just like so dark. Like
it really is.
Oh, we love Wookiees.
It's accentuated and paralleled to what the Wookiees do, which is they're like, we're gonna help, because Echo is also like, oh yeah, we gotta help, right? The Wookiees have been our allies, we gotta do this. And Echo convinces the rest of the group to help, which is great. And another great Echo moment. He's like the conscience right now. It's great.
I know.
The Wookiees all like commune with the tree. And it's explained that the Wookiees all believe that they are all part of the trees on Kashyyyk and that all the trees are interconnected. This is a real thing.
I love. Oh.
No. I'm going to talk about it.
Oh, no. Okay, go ahead.
This is a real thing. So in forests, they actually call it the Wood Wide Web. It's got a cute name. And it's how forests full of trees communicate with each other using the fungi between the roots. This is a real thing.
I know. I'm like, because I fully believe in it. They're living and breathing entities that we don't, they are connected. It's not just scientific to me. It really is its own. Again, like I said, I study the romantics a lot in college and a lot with I did a whole course in like Thoreau and, you know, just talking about nature being its own. It's just its own thing. It's like, obviously, like what you're saying, of course it's true. Of course, like I like know without a shadow of a doubt, without knowing it's the, what did you call it? The wood.
It's the Wood Wide Web. That's like the scientists call it the Internet of Trees, like where that's they, how so they cool. communicate.
Yeah.
But really like it is this symbiotic ecosystem.
Thank you. That's the word I was trying to say. I couldn't think of.
Yeah. It's a symbiotic ecosystem that has been created where, and you'll get I'll attach a cool video in the liner notes because it's really cool how it happens. But you'll have mother trees that have little seedlings under them, and they'll pass nutrients to their babies under the soil. And then older trees will actually distribute their nutrients to younger trees and die earlier if they feel like it'll save them, like those trees. So it's the mycorrhizal network. And that's like the fungi that connect all the different trees and plants.
Thank you
under
for
the ground.
Providing me the next wormhole that I jump into on Wikipedia, where it's just one of those nights where I'm just reading. Because like, I had no idea.
And the Wookiees being part of this, and those like cool sort of mantis-like creatures are part of this, and the trees are part of this, and the land.
Well, they're all interconnected.
Yeah, and it's balanced. So we're talking about being balanced, i.e. the light side versus the consumption of the dark side in a freaking episode about Kashyyyk. And a Padawan Wookiee Jedi.
Well, I mean, that's this episode definitely, I guess, and that's like the point I was making. It's like, I don't ever like looking at it as light side is the good guys and dark side's bad guys, because I also believe that like you should be, you know, emotional and you should kind of lead certain times in your life. Like, I think it's important to lead
you
with
need,
the more emotional.
You need actually to be selfish sometimes. And,
yeah.
But it's about balance, and it's about understanding that you need to have balance. And balance does not mean, you know, oh, I do a little murder on Monday and I do a little, you know, charity on Tuesday and it's balanced, right? No, it's about always trying to do good for yourself and for others, and like having compassion for others and caring about the world and all of that. And you cannot be 100% selfless all the time. We see with Gunji, he loses everything because he lost everything that could possibly have meant anything for him because he was selfless, kind of against his own will.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, that's the flaw of the Jedi continued.
Yeah. So it's not right to go all the way to the extreme. And the balance is finding your own road between those two things.
No, I agree. I mean, that's, I know everybody hates the term like gray Jedi, but it's like, I just like the idea of having that balance. And like, I feel like we just don't get that enough with the
Bendu.
Like what?
Bendu.
Bendu the friendu, as I call him. He's a friend. But I wanted that more in the, again, like back to the Rise of Skywalker, but like, I just want more of that. I don't want to see the light side is good. And this is, you know, I want that balance. And it goes back to what we were saying about how important it is to connect the dots with everyone is like, everybody is connected, including nature itself. Mm-hmm. And the tree, like you're all connected through the Force. I just didn't expect these Force centric episodes.
Yeah.
And even talking about it,
but
just makes me so excited.
But they're not really like on
surface.
No,
they're not.
You're just totally missing it. But once you start to like really just absorb the Star Wars, it's great.
Yeah, I agree.
Eat the Star Wars. It's good and tasty. But they so they fight back with the help of the trees, and they chase the Trandoshans and the Empire away, at least for now. We know that Kashyyyk, like in Jedi Fallen Order, is actually a hotbed of rebellion constantly. So
I had to really, and I had to be told that too after I watched the episode.
That's okay.
Well, because it's connected.
So it's obvious that the Clone Force 99 is going to be probably connected with the rebellion somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fine with me. I mean, I think we all like, or it's something that you either you are expecting or at least hoping for, because otherwise, I mean, what's the purpose of the show?
Yeah.
I mean, other than like,
why tell stories
family
in this specific era unless it's
exactly
related to the rebellion? Because really, it's the biggest problem happening right now. So
yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a problem.
And yeah, I really just loved this episode so much.
These last two episodes, or well, really the last three episodes for me, because I like love the racing, but the last two episodes for me, I mean, just far exceeded my expectations. I don't like expect a certain thing from Bad Batch because I love Bad Batch and I'm going to watch the episodes no matter what. I'm going to enjoy them no matter what. because it's like revisiting friends each time for me. It's like I call them my friends, as I said the last episode I recorded with you. But I just didn't, it's just such a, it's such a delight to get this and with these last two episodes. It's really good.
It's a really good story.
Yeah.
And it's fun. You know, I really enjoyed the expert application of myth and symbolism.
Yeah. Both of now, these. I mean, now it's like, I just didn't have that in mind. I never have that in mind watching.
I'm going to train you up, Molly. This is like
well,
a train.
Please do. Well,
this is like a gym, like a mythic gym.
I expect that lens to be lowered when I watch certain things with Star Wars. And perhaps this goes over my head because I'm just not expecting it when watching The Bad Batch. You know, it's like mm-hmm. I had to really put that thinking cap on with Rebels, even though I started off watching it infamously saying, wait, there's the Force is in this show? There's Jedi? And I think you specifically this was like 2 years ago. I think I tweeted that and you like commented like, yes, there is Jedi in the show. But I just like didn't think that I was going to get that with the show, and I wasn't asking for it, but I'm so happy it's here and it's being told. It's just I can't, like this just makes me so much more excited for what is to come. And mm-hmm. I'm not saying that the first two episodes are bad in any way because they have to jump back into this story. It's really hard to start.
Yeah, we talked about that. We needed to like get you back into it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, these really, really got me back in. Ben Schwartz and then these two episodes really just.
And our super sad crosshair episode that we got.
Yeah. Well, even that, like, of course, because we haven't revisited that yet. And these two episodes, like, I just want more of this. I mean, I love Crosshair too, but I want to revisit that. But then there's a little part of me that's like, I'd be okay with just, we don't worry about Crosshair for the rest of the season. Let's continue with these stories. But like, obviously it's important. Like, I have no idea where the season's going to go anymore. I have no predictions. So it's just really interesting. It's a thinker for me at least.
Yeah. I mean, Crosshair is a lot of stuff to work through.
He's a piece of work. What can we say?
And I think that Echo will win in the base in the end. And I just almost said base. And now I'm wondering if Echo Base is named after Echo.
No, you think what? I didn't even make that connection.
Wait a second.
No.
But I mean, will be named after Echo.
Yeah, I know. But this is like so big brain for me. And not big brain, like wait. Oh, no. Okay. On Wikipedia, it says that it was named due to its strange acoustics. But we don't know if that's true. Anything can be rewritten in Star Wars.
I mean, Rex is that guy in Return of the Jedi. Wouldn't that be wild?
That would be like the coolest thing ever for me. I love stuff like that. I would be perfectly fine with it. I know others may not be. I would be perfectly fine with it. That'd be wild.
Why name him Echo?
I love Echo though. I
wonder. I'm going to put that out in the universe.
Just tweet it. I want to see what the responses are.
I'm sure somebody else will tweet it after we talk or after we get the episode out.
Nah, just do it anyway. I'm just so curious. Oh my gosh. Now I'm just thinking like,
well,
my mind
it would
like,
be something that would happen like later on.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's all good. I really enjoyed this episode. And Molly, thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Of course. And thank you. You know, I'm just so happy to be here. And it makes me so excited about Star Wars, just talking about it. And, you know, I hope this gets listeners excited, even more excited for future projects too, especially because we're getting the gift of more storytelling within the stories that we're seeing. So thank you again for having me.
Oh, anytime. Molly, where can people find you online if they are looking for you?
If you can't hear my loud voice, you can find me on Twitter at Darth Molly, spelled Darth and MAULLIE. And you can also find me on Instagram at Darth_Molly, not Darth Molly. Someone took that name already.
Shame.
I know. They won't give it back.
We've decided to change to every 2 weeks just so that it's easier. I'm finding like covering two episodes at once, except for next week when they actually release two episodes. So we're going to cover those two.
Hope you're ready. I'm excited.
All right. Take care, everyone. Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to What the Force. I'm Marie-Claire Gould, your host. Our music is provided by Christy Carew for What the Force. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/whattheforce. We would like to thank all our patrons, especially those who love and are obsessed with What the Force. Melody, Night Huntress, In Wild Space, How Rude, Anna Perez, Neil, Christian Luca, Josh Johnson, Scott C., and Susan. Make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube or leave a 5-star review on iTunes or other pod apps. It helps people find the show. Check out our other channel on YouTube, What the Fiction. You can connect with us on Twitter at WT Force Show, What the Force Podcast on Facebook, and our website, whattheforce.ca. We also have a Discord. Links are in the liner notes. Feel free to reach out and start a conversation. Cheers.